nations will agree to work together to tackle these cross-border challenges posed by population growth, overconsumption of resources, and environmental degradation, the prospects for a decent life on our planet will be threatened.
David Rockefeller is speaking recently. He's chairman of the Rockefeller Group, about the problem of population. I remember growing up, my childhood spent largely in the late 60s, early 70s, books like The Population Bomb by Paul Ehrlich. They warned us that the world was already overpopulated, that this would lead to a myriad of problems that all of us would have to face, perhaps even mass extinction of the human race. Those are some dire warnings. Scared a little kid like me. Are those claims still being made, and have those claims been institutionalized, both nationally and internationally, the fear over population growth, and are those claims warranted? We're going to talk about the overpopulation myth here in the first half hour of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. You're listening to Issues Etc., and you can join our conversation live this Wednesday. It's the 16th of July, our toll-free number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-I-E. You can also email us with questions or comments as we talk about the overpopulation myth. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Steve Mosher is our first guest. In the second half hour of the program, we'll review a sermon preached by good friend Pastor George Borghardt at St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Conroe, Texas. The text where Jesus says, "Come unto me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, I will give you rest." What is Jesus talking about? We'll find out in about a half hour here on the program. Chris Mino joins us from the Massachusetts Family Institute in the second hour of the program to discuss that state's Senate vote yesterday to allow out-of-state gay couples to come into Massachusetts for marriage in that state. And then we'll round off today's program with Gretchen Passantino of Answers in Action. We'll talk about the pop spirituality of Oprah Winfrey. Fox News has been doing a number of stories on her spirituality. Is she a teacher, a preacher, or an entertainer? We'll entertain all of those questions in the last part of Issues Etc. today. 1-877-623-6943 or talk back at issuesetc.org. Steve Mosher is president of Population Research Institute based in Front Royal, Virginia, and author of the new book, Population Control, Real Costs, Illusory Benefits. Steve, welcome to Issues Etc.
Well, thanks for having me on the show.
Well, in terms of their views on population, do you see a big difference between Paul Ehrlich's 68 book, Population Bomb, and Vice President Al Gore's, 1992 book called Earth in the Balance?
Not really, no. I think that, Al Gore is about my age, and so we both read The Population Bomb in college. And, of course, many people's intellectual development stopped at that point. I went to China and found out what population control looked like on the ground in a country that was serious about limiting the right of parents to have children. It's not a pretty picture. It involved forced abortion and so forth. Al Gore went to Washington and decided that our growing population was a big threat to all kinds of things. I'm afraid that when you're talking about Paul Ehrlich or Al Gore or people like that, they see babies as burdens, not blessings. Al Gore virtually said at one point that he thought that the global warming, every baby was a threat to the planet because it contributed to global warming. I don't know what you're supposed to do, put duct tape over the mouth of your babies so they won't breathe out CO2. I'm not recommending doing that, but it was his book is very, very anti-people.
But some would say, who could argue with the raw numbers? We can make fair estimates as to the world's population in recent history. Now we're at about 6 billion. Some are projecting, by 2025, perhaps 8 billion. It seems as though the population is exploding. How do you see the numbers?
Well, actually, that's my point. One of my points in my book is that who can argue with the raw numbers, because the numbers of children born around the world are falling, and falling more rapidly than anyone imagined 40 years ago, certainly more rapidly than Paul Ehrlich imagined in 1968 when he wrote The Population Bomb. And Al Gore got it wrong in 1992 when he said that world population was increasing by 100 million a year. And no, it isn't. It wasn't then. It was increasing about 80 million. Now it's dropped to 70. It will drop to zero by about 2040. By that I mean that at 2040, roughly, give or take a few years, we will reach the maximum number of people on the planet of 8 billion, give or take a few hundred million. And after that, the population will decline. So within about 32 years, our problem is not going to be too many babies born, but too few.
How is that? Can you explain the peaking at about 8 billion and then the decline?
Well, what happened was, you know, back in the 1950s, everybody thought the developing world was going to have to reach European and North American living standards before they stopped having children. That turned out to be completely false. The average, I mean, Mexico is still a relatively poor country today. The average Mexican woman today averages 1.9 children. The birth rate in Mexico is below that of the United States. In 1960, the average Mexican woman was averaging 6 children. It has dropped from 6 down to 1.9 and still falling in the course of the last 48 years. So what we've seen is just these incredible declines in fertility rates, and we know why they happened. I mean, once you have modern medical care and once children stop dying in childbirth and infancy and childhood, most couples naturally start having fewer children. So, you know, when these population controllers go out and try to force women to be sterilized, force abortions on them, force them to contracept, they're doing exactly the wrong thing, because if you prevent people from having babies, you know, they want them even more. But if you ensure that their children grow up to adulthood, all of a sudden, it's hard to maintain even 2 children. Look at Europe today. Europe is dying. You know, Europe is averaging 1.3 children. Why? Because of very low infant and child mortality rates on the one hand, and secondly, because there are very few Europeans in churches on Sunday on the other.
Okay, so there is a delayed effect, in other words, that we have to take into account here, and that is the fact that there are fewer babies being born and that that we're not at replacement levels, even in less than developed countries, mm-hmm. tell us that 30 years down the line, the population, while it will have peaked, will begin to decline. Is that the delayed effect we're talking
that's right.
about?
Absolutely. And what happened over the last 50 years is interesting, because in 1960, we had 3 billion people. In 2000, we crossed the 6 billion threshold. But that wasn't because everybody started breeding like rabbits. Remember that Mexican mothers were seeing smaller and smaller families throughout that time. What happened was people stopped dying like flies, especially infants and small children. And so it's a great victory over death. I mean, lifespans increased from after World War II to the present day from about 40 years of age on average to 70. And naturally, if we're living almost twice as long, there are going to be more of us around at any given time. But that's not something to despair over. That's not something that Paul Ehrlich should write books about. I mean, if you write a book about that, you have to say that's a great victory for human health and longevity. Longevity is the ultimate measure of human well-being. If people are eating well and living well and getting pretty good health care, they live longer. Why should we complain about that?
What is being done today in various places, in the name of population control?
Well, I'll tell you one thing that's happening that frightens me here at home, and that is that there is a move afoot challenging the right to have children. The Yale Law Journal, Yale Law School, it's a very prestigious law school, sends its graduates to the Supreme Court to clerk for the justices. They just published a lengthy study arguing that there's no right, a basic human right, to determine the number and spacing of one's children. Couples don't have that right. It said a government should pass laws in order to limit that right. People only have a right to replace themselves, have one child, or maybe two. Now, that's an idea that's very current in academic circles. It's very common in Europe as well. And I think what's going on here is, first of all, you've got the population controllers who want to reduce the world's population down to some imaginary carrying capacity. And secondly, you've got these secular humanists who aren't having any children and who worry that they're going to be swamped by the children of those who do read the good book and do want to accept children into their families.
With only about a minute or so here before we take our first break, Steve, is this in any sense a rich-poor issue?
Well, you quoted, you allowed David Rockefeller to speak at the beginning of the program. And I find it rather amusing at one level that someone who is worth well over $1 billion should complain about, you know, there being too many people. you know, John D. Rockefeller III, his relative, decided a long time ago that there were too many people after World War II and set out to found the Population Council to reduce human numbers. These people who are very wealthy seem to think that they, by virtue of their inherited wealth, they're somehow more fit. They're better than the rest of us. And I think they're discomforted by the poor, and they seek to eliminate them. And, of course, someone very well known said, you will always have the poor with you. And I would add to that that, yes, you will, and you cannot eliminate poverty by trying to eliminate the poor and their children. And yet that's what the very wealthy of the world seem to be out to do.
We're talking with Steve Mosher. He's president of Population Research Institute based in Front Royal, Virginia, author of the new book, Population Control, Real Costs, Illusory Benefits. We're talking about the overpopulation myth. You can join us with questions or comments. We're coming to you live this Wednesday, the 16th of July, 877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or email your questions or comments to us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. talkback@issuesetc.org. When we come back, we'll talk about the term of art, family planning, and international organizations, non-governmental organizations, you name it, that all seem to be towing the line when it comes to the population myth. Stay tuned. On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,500 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Elizabeth Dock, Pastor Charles Burhup, James Lowitzer, Gervaisi Charmley, Dr. Uwe Simonetto, Susan Buto, Mark Hesse, Keith Wilson, Pastor Jeremy Lesh, and Barbara Pauling. Thanks for your support.
618-223-8384. It's the new phone number for the Issues Etc. listener comment line. 618-223-8384. Leery about calling a live radio talk show? Want to remain anonymous? Leave your recorded question or comment on the Issues Etc. comment line. 618-223-8384. The good, the bad, the ugly. We're big boys. We can take it. 618-223-8384.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Every day in America, more than 3,500 babies die from abortion. Since 1973, the annual number of abortions has nearly doubled, from approximately 750,000 a year to over 1.3 million. Abortion isn't rare or safe, only legal, and every day thousands of women and teenagers are told that it is their only chance at a future. Every year, more unborn children die from abortion than Americans died in the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, both World Wars, the Korean, Vietnam, and Persian Gulf Wars combined. We at National Right to Life are working to break this cycle through education and legislation. We are working for the day when abortion will no longer exist and every child will be welcomed with open arms and protected by our laws. This has been a perspective on life from National Right to Life. For more information, visit our website, www.nrlc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkins. Steve Mosher is our guest. We're talking about the overpopulation myth. He's author of the book, Population Control, Real Cost, Illusory Benefits. 1-877-623-6943 or talk back at issuesetc.org. Steve, there are several terms of art that I think you need to explain to us and then tell us how they relate to the whole issue of kind of the institutionalized reaction to the population myth. The first one is family planning. What is it supposed to mean?
Well, it means in the mind of the population controllers that the government, international agencies like the Planned Parenthood Federation, International Planned Parenthood Federation, the UN Population Fund will plan your family for you. It implies a limitation on the number of children, and these are people who believe that really the only only the decision not to have children is free, and that if you bring children in the world, that you shouldn't have to pay a cost in order to do that because you affect everybody else. And I would say, sure, you affect everybody else. You affect everybody else in a positive way. Every child coming into the world is a blessing for one's family, for the community, for the larger economy, and it's the socially responsible thing to do.
What about the term reproductive rights, especially as it is used in the international community?
Well, reproductive rights is a code word for abortion. When international feminist groups Genuity talk about reproductive rights, what they're talking about is an unfettered, unlimited right to abortion. So reproductive rights is really what they consider to be the right not to reproduce. Well, no one is forced to bear children in this world today. Although China may come to that if they continue their one child policy to an extreme, but these people would like to overturn laws. There are laws in over 100 countries limiting abortion, in many countries putting it entirely off limits. There are well-funded groups, however, that are out there trying to force people who are naturally pro-life and pro-family in Latin America, say, Central America, in order to change their laws and allow abortion on demand.
We hear people talk today about a carbon footprint. I heard recently on a science program on the radio talking about your water footprint, how much water you use in the course of a year. How far are we from people starting to discuss your child footprint or your family footprint in terms of...
Well, they already are. I mean, there are serious proposals out there to make people pay a child tax upon birth, it's sort of an advance carbon tax for all the carbon dioxide that child will exhale and consume over the course of his or her lifetime. And, you know, this is entirely nonsensical on several levels. The first level that's nonsensical on is that, for example, the average baby born in the United States is going to contribute about two-thirds of $1 million, about $650,000 more to the economy than they consume. So every baby born is a blessing. Every baby aborted is the death of a small fortune. What do you need to solve environmental problems? Well, you need to have the money, the resources to set aside to address those problems. What causes environmental problems is poverty, above all. It's the very poor who cut down the last tree for fuel, who plant the last square foot of land for food, who pollute the water they need to drink because they can't afford to build sanitation facilities. And wealth enables you to solve the problems that are caused by your numbers. Where does wealth come from? Well, it comes from people. Without people, you can't generate the wealth you need to solve the problems and reduce the human footprint. You want to reduce the human footprint. The wealthy countries have the wherewithal to do that. The poor countries like China are just an environmental disaster because they're not yet able to set aside the funds they need to solve the environmental problems they've created.
What have the successes, quote-unquote successes, of population control gotten us? I mean, what have they given us?
Well, first of all, they've made us all poor because... Japan, for example, embarked on a kind of voluntary one-child policy in the 1960s. Japan is now shrinking in population, and economic growth is slowing as a result. China, of course, has become the ugly poster child of population control programs because of its massive human rights abuses. The Chinese government brags about having prevented 300 million births in China. Well, what they've done is they've destroyed 300 million, children who would have been industrious, productive people contributing to the economy in the future. They've made themselves poor. These programs cause massive human rights abuses. They also cause other kinds of deaths. You know, when you have a population control program in place, a family planning program in place, a reproductive health program in place, other areas tend to get neglected. So deaths from malaria go up, HIV/AIDS deaths go up, deaths from typhus and typhoid go up. No one's paying attention. They're all busy doing sterilizations or performing abortions.
How have, I'm thinking about women and children, let's start with the women, how have women fared under policies, governmental policies and otherwise, that are driven by the population control myth?
Well, I mean, women have been the big targets of these programs from the beginning. I mean, the only population control program I know about dozens and dozens around the world, that targeted men was the one in India a few years ago, where they set out to vasectomize millions and millions of Indian men. The program ended 18 months later with major riots in India's large cities, and the people rioting were untouchables, untouchable men and also Muslims, because the untouchables and the Muslims had realized that while the program was being run by high-caste Hindus, the actual men being sterilized were low-caste or no-caste untouchables and minority Muslims. But so that campaign, you know, didn't go anywhere. But it's always women who pay a price for these programs. It's the women in China who are forcibly aborted. It's the women in Peru who are, and Mexico who are sterilized or made to wear IUDs against their will. So women suffer, and you know, this is not what women want. I mean, we've gone into countries in Africa, for example, and Latin America, and asked women, what are your real health needs? I mean, what are you concerned about having access to in terms of health care for you and your families? And they say things like clean drinking water. In Mexico, they said, we need programs to prevent spousal abuse, surprising us a little bit. In Ghana, they said, well, we need to address yellow fever, typhus, and typhoid, and above all, AIDS. That's what they said in Kenya as well. And they put reproductive health, family planning, right down at the bottom. It's not what they want, and yet it's one of the principal aims of our foreign aid program.
And what about children? We heard from an administration official about a decade back or more, saying every child a wanted child. Sounded so compassionate. What did it really mean, and how have children fared?
Well, when the government of a country like China or India or Mexico, for that matter, or Peru decides that there are too many children, it has, by fiat, declared a large number of the coming generation to be unwanted. And it doesn't matter at that point what the parents think, because the government has taken from them the right to decide the number and spacing of their children. And, you know, the one of the worst experiences for anybody in the third world who's poor, especially a poor woman, is to have a government official show up on her doorstep, because it invariably means trouble. And in this case, it means that the woman will be taken away for sterilization or told that she must, you know, start taking contraceptives or some other intrusion into her personal life. And if they say no, then they will not be welcome at the health clinic the next time they become ill, or they will be fined, or they will be threatened in some other way. But, you know, the poor people in developing countries are fearful of the government. And when we get governments into the business of controlling the number of children their people have, human rights violations follow.
Stephen St. Louis writes this: another issue that is not talked about is the number of female babies being aborted so that a family can have a male. This creates an imbalance of the boy-girl balance, which will cause long-term destabilization to society. Your thoughts on Steve's letter there?
Well, yeah, in China and India and the other Confucian cultures of the Far East, you have the massive killing of baby girls. It used to be 25 years ago that these babies were killed at birth in China. That still happens. Female infanticide is still a problem. But what you have now with the advent of ultrasound machines is something else. You have sex-selective abortion. You have ultrasounds done at 20, 25 weeks gestation. If the sonogram reveals a little boy, the family celebrates. If it reveals a little girl, she's immediately killed by abortion. The shortfall of women in China has now reached epidemic proportions. There are 120 million men in China who will not be able to get married, not be able to find brides because their brides have been killed. India is almost in as bad a shape. And, you know, the tragedy is one of the things that our research here at the Population Research Institute has shown is that this problem is coming to the United States. In Asian American communities in the United States, you see more little boys than you would expect. And we assume that what's happening is that parents who have a preference for sons are going in and selectively aborting daughters. Most Americans think that's a horrific crime, and yet under our very liberal abortion laws, it is allowed.
Steve Mosher is president of Population Research Institute based in Front Royal, Virginia, author of the new book, Population Control, Real Costs, Illusory Benefits. You'll find a link to the Population Research Institute under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. issuesetc.org. Steve, thank you very much for being our guest.
Well, thank you for having me, Todd.
When we come back from this break, it is sermon review time here on Issues Etc. Last sermon we reviewed, what was it, Joel Osteen. We spent an entire hour, which is rare, reviewing as much of a Joel Osteen sermon as we could. Very little Jesus. I think Jesus was mentioned one time. And no cross, of course. Well, when we come back, we'll review a sermon preached by Pastor George Borghardt of St. Mark Lutheran Church in Conroe, Texas, on Jesus' own words. We'll see whether or not Christ crucified is preached. Stay tuned.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.